Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations and find special deals on Ante Up gear and great poker products at anteupstore.com. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the WDAE Sports Animal Studios in Tampa, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's September 16th, 2011, and you're listening to the best poker cast on the internet. I'm Natalie Imbruglia.
Are you torn?
I am torn, although I can rest assured that Ant Nation has no worries. I am not lying naked on the floor.
Yeah, that would be bad. That'd be really bad.
I gotta tell you, I mean, everyone first, you know, you're Scott Long, so they're not confused. But you know, exactly what I feared would happen is happening now with the World Series and ESPN. I watched the live coverage. I was entranced by it. I loved it. But the problem is that I have a pretty good memory. And so everything I've seen on the World Series in live play, you know, when they're at the feature table in the live stuff, that's the feature table for the main event coverage that comes later with all the gushy stuff about people dying and homeless and everything. So, you know, the same hands are coming up that are interesting. And if you have any kind of memory, which if you're a poker player, it's a good thing to have, you're going to remember all the big hands and the cool hands and things that happened and the conversations that happened. And I've given it a shot. You know, the first few weeks it wasn't the main event, so I watched those episodes. But I have to admit, I'm literally not even finishing watching the ESPN coverage now when I'm watching it. I started for a little while, and I'm like, yep, this is the hand where, you know, Cunningham makes quads and knocks a guy stack in half because he makes top set and then makes a smaller boat. And, you know, and so, I mean, all these things are happening. Now, here's the conversation John Robert Ballon has about, you know, never winning on a free roll in the World Series, but he actually hits. You know, I mean, all these things I've seen, and it's just really frustrating. And watching those sappy segments in between and Norman Chad's brilliant humor, which I still think is brilliant. I'm sorry if no people don't agree with me, but I think he's brilliant. But other than those two things really aren't enough to keep me watching. I'm really upset by it.
Well, you know, this was part of the thing that I think people were wondering about when they did the near live back in the summer. Were the hardcore fans going to be able to come back in the fall and watch it when it was all edited and made pretty and stuff?
Yeah.
And, you know, I guess this is something we didn't really think about at the time, is that you're going to be seeing it's almost like repeats.
Yeah, you know, because my first one, you know, concern was that it was going to be like, how sincere am I going to think about Lon and Norman's reactions to these things, but that stuff I totally just forgotten about, that Lon has seen all this stuff already and Norman's seen some of it or whatever. But now wait a minute, it's deja vu, haven't I seen this before? And the most interesting stuff is when they go out to like way outer tables, but even those things, they're just all in calls and you're just watching the result and reaction, and that's really the most boring part of No Limit Hold'em Poker on TV. So right. Really, yeah, I'm just not entertained at all, and I think that they should just probably branch out with the live coverage a little more and show the undercard events that we didn't see, because this is really just I'm not watching it. I'm literally not watching it, and I'm on the cusp of like canceling the season pass I have. I know. But luckily there is another show, sort of reality television, that has another poker player involved. Of course, it's called Survivor. Survivor, baby. Yeah.
And I think you and Jeff Probst, you always hear two people that say, luckily there's a new show debuting.
Well, we're taping this on a Thursday, but, you know, so last night the new season of Survivor started, and there's a poker player on. His name's Jim Rice, and anybody who's, like, rabid poker news people, they'll already have known this, but we haven't really mentioned it on the show yet.
And he's Boston Rob?
What's that?
Is he friends with Boston Rob?
I bet you he is. But it's what, the at least the third show that they've had a poker player on, or third season, when you count Jean Robert and all the other seasons that Boston Rob.
If your name's Jim Rice, you probably got to be friends with Boston Rob, right?
Yeah, you should be playing right field for the Red Sox. Yeah, I get the joke. I'm just trying to let your subtle humor be subtle. You were the one going on and on with it. But anyway, you know, he's on, and he says something on the show where I've won over 20 poker tournaments or something, and so it's funny.
I've won over 20 poker tournaments.
That's what he says, and then you look it up, and there's nothing on Hendenbob, so we're thinking, okay, he's talking about, online sit-and-goes, maybe, I don't know. I know he's made a final table at a Heartland event. And some other stuff. But anyway, it's an interesting season. They brought back, Coach, the Dragon Slayer, and an Ozzy, the guy who can swim and climb and jump and whatever. But this guy already starts mixing it up like a poker player would, you know. One of the women on the show volunteered to do something because she said she could do it really well. And then when it came time to do it, she was horrid. So he was making faces behind her when they were talking to Jeff, like, man, what do you mean, you know, you retired, you were horrible, you know, or whatever it was. And so they're already mixing it up, and the poker player's already got a target on his back, and but they voted her off, so he should survive a little longer.
Yeah,
you shouldn't be. Well, no, she's on that stupid island, so she's not gone yet, so you're not really missing anything, so don't worry.
Yeah, thanks.
But it's interesting that they keep picking poker players for Survivor.
Well, I think they there were some rumors before last season that they were looking for somebody again, and I think we talked about this before when Jean Robert was on. It's kind of a natural thing to have is somebody that kind of thinks analytically and is quote unquote a gambler, even though poker players won't call themselves gamblers.
Right.
You got some of the same skill sets going on, and I think they think poker players make interesting TV because they do get in there and are strategic and not just sitting there looking cute in a bikini.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I mean, it doesn't surprise me.
It was nominal what he did. I mean, it wasn't like a massive plot line or anything like that, because you're just trying to get used to knowing everybody in the first week and everything. But I can see this guy mixing it up and being a pretty good contestant on the show. So it's pretty cool. I hope he goes pretty far. I want to see how this turns out.
Well, you know, here we go. We got this guy out there in the outdoors, right?
Yeah.
And, Chris, I got to say, we've had this debate on the show several times. Never really come to a good resolution as to whether poker is a sport or not, right?
Oh, no, not again.
No. Hey, this is going to be the last time we bring it up on the show.
Okay.
Until next time. And the reason it's going to be the last time is because I have uncovered, and I'm going to pause a little bit and let all of our listeners sit down, because this is a bombshell I'm dropping on you.
Yeah, pull the car over. If you're jogging, take a seat on the park bench.
Absolutely, absolutely. I have found indisputable evidence that poker is not a sport.
Wow.
I'm putting this debate to rest.
I can't believe it. I can't believe it.
And I'm excited, too. I solved this before we figured out who D.B. Cooper was. So you're watching your little shows. The other day during lunch, I was flipping channels and came across this comedy special from this really funny guy, Alonzo Bowden. I don't know if you've seen him before, but he went pretty far on Last Comic Standing a couple years ago. Might even won. I can't remember. But he's really funny.
Uh-huh.
And he has his own special now. It's on Starz or Showtime or one of those S channels that I pay $47 each for every month.
Right.
And so I watched the whole thing and laughed uproariously. And note to self, you got to quit watching stand-up comedy when eating lunch. not a good idea.
Egg salad out the nose.
Yeah. finally, towards the end of the special, and I'm not pimping for this guy. I'm not making any money off this. But if you have one, whatever channel this is on, go catch it because it's really funny. But he has this bit at the end where he's talking about a bunch of guys sitting around the poker table talking about Viagra.
Oh, no.
All right? And it's absolutely hilarious, so I'm not going to steal his material. Go watch it, and you'll laugh at what he had to say. But, you know, at that point, bing, light bulb goes off. And here is why poker's not a sport, Chris.
Okay.
It's because Pfizer doesn't think it is.
Pfizer.
All right, now, think about this. Stay with me a little bit. I know I'm out there a little bit. When you see a commercial for a sex pill, what are the guys doing? They're whitewater rafting. They're kayaking. They're golfing. They're wrestling Yukon grizzly bears. They're not sitting their fat butts around a poker table drinking beer and, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And this is what I think is funny, is because what made Alonzo's bit funny was he's like, you know, hey, this is manly, right? This is poker. What was more manly than a bunch of guys sitting around the table yucking it up, having some beers, playing some cards, right?
Right.
I don't think anybody's going to disagree with that, and I mean no disrespect for the women, but, you know, that's just kind of like, you know, old school guy's night out, right?
Yeah.
So why would they not do a Viagra commercial with guys sitting around the poker table taking other guys' money and then running off to that, you know, that bathtub that's inexplicably just hanging out by the beach and, you know, making the wife happy?
Yeah, I think you're getting your sex pills mixed up, but...
they all do the same thing, I think.
They all do the same thing.
And the point is because poker is not active enough to compensate guys for their lack of sexual ability. You know, if you have trouble pitching the tent, you do feel like a man if you're out there, you know, paddling down the rapids. But you do not feel like a man if you're just sitting at the table. It's just not physical enough for Pfizer to consider it a good sales pitch for Viagra, and therefore, poker is not a sport. Thank you very much. This is why folks tune in to Ante Up, because we do this hard research. We don't just put bits on the show and then forget about it.
Oh, man. You're killing me. You're so... Oh, my God. Well, you know, I have to admit that I took Viagra once, and I didn't take it with water, and it got caught in my throat, and I had a stiff neck for weeks. It's driving me crazy.
Bum ba dum bum. Folks, if you want to see real comedy, check out the Alonzo Bowden special on Stars or Showtime or Sony or whatever channel it is. Skip right past the man behind the microphone here.
Very interesting, very interesting, Scott. I like your I like your assessment here, and I'll be sticking to the television to watch, because you know there is some other stuff on there too, like the, you know, the guy sat at work, but then as soon as he takes his pill, he's always happy and smiling and everything. So mm-hmm. I'll have to see if those are sport like activities associated with those pills.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah, but see that stuff, that's not those are not gender specific. pharmaceuticals there.
That's true.
You know, it's got to be a male-specific pharmaceutical in this case. And again, I'm not leaving the women out. You know, I'm sure they've got some kind of... I just don't see those commercials the same way.
Well, this is a great time to introduce our new sponsor. Kidding, of course, we don't have any... any male enhancement stuff sponsoring the show today, so just relax.
Well, you know, I don't know whether they have Viagra in Australia, but they do have some of the best Andy Up fans in the world.
Absolutely.
Down under. And we've got a couple folks. Well, actually, you know,
I'm an
ugly American because I lump Australia, New Zealand, and Tasmania and whatever else is over there into the same little picture of the world. But we got a bunch of emails from them this week. And you know what? The thing I like most about getting emails from our fans is not just getting the emails, which are great, and are always, you know, to crack me up or challenge my thinking or something like that. But, you know, I get into these good back-and-forth conversations with some folks. And this particular one comes from Matt from Australia. And he sent us in a hand of the week, which actually turned out to be one of those hand situations that we'll bring back on the show later on. So you'll hear more from him on a future show. But in the course of corresponding back and forth, I learned a whole lot about how they do rake in Australia, Chris.
Yeah.
And conversely, he learned a lot about how we do rake in the U.S., and I'm guessing he's probably booking a plane ride over here to the States, because I was shocked. I was actually shocked at how much money comes out of pots in Australia, because, you know, I've never been there.
Yeah, yeah.
But I got to get there at some point because we have all these fans there. But when I get there, I'm definitely going to be playing home games.
that would be a huge meetup, too, if we went down there.
It would be. It would be a lot of fun. And I also told Matt in the course of this, too, that you and I are putting the magazine up for sale using the money to buy a casino in Australia. Because we're going to make bank, buddy.
That's right. We're going to bring the rake down and be freaking set for life.
All right, well, he was telling me the hand of the week that he sent in. They have this thing called, it's a $1, $2 no limit, but it's a turbo. Now, remember we talked about this on the show? We kind of were joking about it on the show a couple weeks ago, I think. No, hey, they should put a clock on action so it goes faster, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Right, ho, 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 how could they do that? Well, apparently they figured that in Australia. you do, I think it's like 20 or 30 seconds, whatever, to act. Now, first, before I get into the whole rake, I'm going to say the guy who developed this is a genius.
Okay.
For the casino.
All
right?
Okay, yeah.
He should be the general manager. He should even have an ownership stake in whatever casino he came up with. Because by putting a timer on it, you're getting a lot more hands in, right?
Yeah.
Per hour, which means more rake.
Yeah.
And then when you hear how much they rake on top of this, Donald Trump is blushing right now. All right, so on this particular game, it is a 10% rake up to a $15 cap, Chris.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm waiting to hear it because I know there's more to it, so I want to hear what else you got to say.
I mean, $15 cap. I mean,
yeah, well, it's a ship. Maybe the country is owned by Carnival Cruises or something. I don't know.
All right, well, that's already three times here, and I guess I should pause. You know, because obviously a lot of our listeners live here in the United States and they know what the rake structure is here, but obviously Matt was learning from me what it was. So for our listeners around the globe, traditionally here in the States, it's 10% up to $5.
Yeah, actually,
sometimes four.
Four,
sometimes.
Yeah, four. I had an argument with somebody once, too. I think it might have been at our meetup in Vegas because they're asking what the rake was on our ship. And we're like, 10% up to five. And he's like, five? And I'm like, hey, it's four in Vegas and it's four in Atlantic City. And he's going on. And I was like, okay, whatever. So, yeah, five or four, depending where you are.
Yeah, or sometimes three.
Sometimes three.
Most rooms do take a $1 or $2 jackpot rake as well, too. So you got to consider that.
Right.
And then, of course, tipping is customary here in the States. Somewhere between $1 and $3 at the games that we play.
Yeah.
You know, a little bit more if you're generous and win a big hand. A little bit less if you're 90 years old playing Omaha 8 and you get half the pot. So that's the U.S. here. Now, 10% up to $15, to me, that's pretty excessive.
Yeah.
All right. Now, of course, he mentions that it's not the norm to tip dealers in Australia, and he said it's under his understanding they make about $25 in pay per hour. So that's the difference here in the States is that our dealers get a very, you know, whatever the typical minimum wage is here, which is far lower than $25, and they make the money on tip. So
right.
Then you take the tip out of there, and then it helps a little bit, but doesn't get it all the way up to $15. Now, of course, this is the turbo thing, so it's a little different. But he says most pots, most tables, and he mentioned the $2, $3 no-limit table, has a $5 time charge and a 10% rake with an $8 cap.
Wow.
All right, and I guess I didn't finish this on the U.S. here. The higher limit games in the U.S. Don't do pot rakes at all. They do time rakes, which I think... I haven't played these in a while, but I think somewhere between $5 and $7 a half an hour.
Yeah.
I think is about norm.
Yeah.
But they don't take if you. It's either one or the other here, and this is where this discussion started. I'm like, wow, you know, they do both. So they do both there: $5 time charge and a 10% rake, and it's a higher cap. Though I guess at $8, you know, if you factor in the jackpot rake and the tip, then it's about what we have here. So it's not that bad. You're only paying an extra $10 an hour, but still, it adds up.
For, yeah, sure it does.
You know. A game. I don't think people really realize how much a dollar here, dollar there adds up.
And then when we always talk about a time rake and how we don't really like it if you're a tight player. Imagine being a tight player in that game. You know, you're paying $10 an hour to not even play a hand. And then when you do play a hand, they're taking $8 from you on top of it if you win it. You know what I mean? You're paying $18 to play one hand an hour. You know what I mean? Or whatever. But if you're a really tight player, you could easily play one hand or two hands an hour. You know, maybe three. That's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and I was telling them, too, I mean, you know, if they're good at time rake me, then I want to get in this turbo game. And I think it's interesting that in the turbo game, they don't do the time rake.
Yeah.
Because in a turbo game, then at least I know I'm getting more hands per hour that I'm paying for. Because remember, in a time rake, you're paying for hands whether you win or lose.
Yep.
Which is why we don't like it, which you just mentioned. And in a pot rake, you're only paying when you win. So, I mean, if you totally suck crap that day, you know, all you're doing is just losing the money you lost. You're not paying any directly in the rake.
Exactly.
But if it's a time rake, yeah. On top of that, I mean, there's nothing worse. This is, I mean, the couple times that I played a time charge, nothing worse than sitting down, being card dead, getting in a hand, losing it, having like $20 left in front of you, and the dealer taps out and sits down, all right, time charge, everybody give me my $5. And you're like, are you kidding me? At that point, you know, that's 25% left. What'd you have left in you? Hey, $15.
I have to ask, though. Have you ever really sat a time rake? I have, but have you?
I did actually when the limits not this last time when the limits changed, but the first time the limits changed in Florida.
Okay.
A lot of the rooms around here did time break for everything.
Okay. I couldn't remember.
I think I played like 3 sessions is all, and then I'm like, you know what, this is not for me. I don't play No Limit to begin with, and then I play tight as anything, and this time break is just ridiculous, so I'll just wait until people whine about it enough. And that's exactly what happened. Enough people whined about it that they said, all right, fine, we'll go back to the pot rate.
I remember because Sam was like, don't you guys understand that we make more money when we don't do a time break? And I'm like, we don't care. You know, go ahead, make more money. Do what's best for you. We don't care. We don't want to pay that rake for no reason. I can see if you're playing high stakes, that's one thing. But
that was an interesting point is that, you know, the one manager that you mentioned was arguing for it says, hey, I'm trying to keep more money on the table. You know, for a no-limit game, that's important for people. You know, if you sit down and you look around the table and everybody's bought in for $20, you're not going to win much money.
Right.
That game, but if you sit down and everybody's got $1,000 in front of you, well, that's different. So the more money the casino keep on the table, the more money you can win, and theoretically the game will be better. But it just depends on the type of player you are. For my type of player, me, I hate the time rate.
Yeah, me too. Well, it's something we agree upon too. That's very shocking.
Yeah, let's not let that happen too often.
Well, speaking of rakes, first our hotline is 813-448-1120. You call that number and we use your clip, we'll give you something really cool. And this one talks about rakes and New York City games. Let's hear what he has to say.
Hey, NEF podcast, first-time caller. Wanted to ask you guys a couple questions. Do you guys recommend a way to find, like, a home game or a game that's run, like an underground club in, like, New York City or around New York City that is not charging, like, $15 rake per hand. This is kind of the theme that I found, and the only way to find a game in the city is these ridiculously overrated large games that play basically 1-3 no limit with a $500 buy-in where no one buys in for anything but the maximum. So these games are kind of ridiculous, and getting like $15 a hand no matter what the players are like, is unbeatable in stupidity to me.
All right, first, I like the fact that he's anonymous.
Yeah.
He's like, hey, you know what? I'm playing these underground games.
Shh, don't tell nobody I'm calling in.
I need a little help, but I'm Joe from Long Island. Yes, that's my name. I think this is it. I mean, obviously, we already addressed how to find a home game and all that a couple weeks ago, or even last week, I think. But I think this is just an interesting thing, again, that people need to realize. You have a gun to your head, you're not going to get the best deal.
All right?
You don't do the negotiation when the gun is pointed at you. You do the negotiation when the gun's pointing at someone else.
And when you're pointing the gun.
Yeah. So these places, I mean, obviously they're operating illegally, though it's kind of a loosey-goosey kind of illegal from what I understand, unless, of course, you're A-Rod. Who are you going to complain to? Are you going to go down to your local police precinct and go, hey, Joe's game over there on West 52nd is taking $15 rake? Oh, okay, yeah, great, thanks.
Hey, I just saw a worm at the Chesterfield dealing from the bottom of the deck. Can you guys, ignore the little wire around Famke Janssen's neck? And I know you guys are getting paid. Can you come down and lower the rake for me and get Worm out of that game?
We're having fun. But, I mean, that's the point. I mean, you know, you got to take what you can get in your market. And this isn't really a New York thing either. I mean, what if you go to Australia? The same guy could be complaining about it, right?
Yeah, right.
You know, it's just where it is, and, you know, the best thing to do to get rake lower is competition.
So open up your own underground New York game.
There you go. Yeah, if you want to play for less, you open your own game, and you can set the rake whatever you want.
Of course, we're not advocating illegal poker, so don't think we are, because we're not. But I can see why he's upset, but at the same time, you know, you don't have to play there. That's the thing. You don't have to play there, so.
Yeah. Oh, hey, you get on that little bus and get down to AC, and it's $4 there.
Or, you know, take the ride to Niagara or Turning Stone. You know, guys go there, too.
That's like an overnight trip.
Hey, I don't care. State. You still get it on a boat. I mean, a bus or whatever.
Get on a
still,
boat.
Still get there somehow.
Yeah, we go down to the boat station. Hey, can you take me to Niagara Falls? Thanks.
Give me a barrel when we get there. I'm going to go over the falls.
All right, Mr. No Name. We would love to send you a t-shirt from PMS Pokerwear, which sells hilarious shirts for gals and guys in the Antiup store at antiupstore.com. You're going to have to claim it by emailing us your phone number, because that's the only way we're going to be able to identify you. So all those of you out there going, ha-ha, there's no name. I'm going to steal this shirt. Uh-uh. Going to have to guess the phone number. Good luck with that.
We had a great mailbag this week. Of course, you've already insulted them, so now they're probably not going to like us anymore. But,
how have I insulted my great friends down under?
Because you lumped them in with Australia a couple minutes ago. So,
yeah, I was sure about the first one to do that.
I don't know where you want to start this letter, though. Do you want to start it from when he started writing, or you want to read all this other stuff?
No, it was a great letter. We just don't have time to read all of it. So, but it comes from Timo down in New Zealand,
Yep. Which
is not Australia, despite what you heard in the top of the show.
That's right.
And he started with a language lesson, which you would think would be unusual, but not when I'm getting the emails. Most people even have to just explain basic words to me. But he says, Kiora. Chris and Scott.
Kiora.
Somehow you got top billing there, but Kiora. And it's Maori for hello / hi.
All right.
Of course, he didn't tell us how to pronounce Maori. So
yeah, I don't know what that is, but how you doing?
All right, well, he was telling us that he got flustered. He was at a bar league game. He got frustrated because he ran a bluff, got sniffed out in No Limit Hold'em. And so he said, hey, does anybody want to play Stud 8? And he got a bunch of people playing it. People watched it, loved it so much that they canceled their next week's No Limit Hold'em tournament to play Stud 8 instead.
Awesome.
This is a guy with power, Chris. So he started later with that. But then he went on to say they've also started playing Raz in their home game, and everyone loves it. Everybody must be making their lows on 7th Street. That's the only reason everybody loves Raz.
That's right.
He says, so much so that they've now banned Hold'em for the next few months with the goal of trying to learn as many different games as possible.
Awesome.
See, I didn't need any more reason to want to get all the way down there. Now, I'm already looking at cruise ships in Australia for an Antiup poker cruise. He says, interestingly, during one of our home games a few months ago, one of the guys asked me what made me try something other than Hold'em. I told him about the Antiup podcast, and I pulled out my iPod and played your latest show. Everyone enjoyed it so much that we now listen as a group every weekend before our home game.
Oh, man.
So you have a group of six people here in Palmerstown North, New Zealand, who are devoted fans. We sit around the table with beer, pausing every now and then to discuss some point or other. The result is some very interesting discussions on strategy, and we all feel that our games are improving as we are now thinking more about the reason we are making a specific play. I don't know if they're taking Viagra or not. find out that later. But he says, so Chris and Scott, thanks for opening our eyes to the joys of something other than No Limit Hold'em. Keep up your great work from your New Zealand fan club. And that's David, Ken, Ant, Steve, Dave, and Timo.
Man, that's easily my favorite email of the year. I even told him that, too. We started going back and forth, and he was telling me if I wanted to play in their game, one of the prerequisites is I had to enjoy beer. And I was like, well, I like root beer. I like root beer. And he's like, all right, that's okay. You just got to supply the root beer.
Is not okay.
He said it was all right, so.
He's going to invite us into his home. You drink what he offers you.
I'll have to have some beer, I guess. But, I said if I could have root beer, then I'm there. So I'm going to New Zealand, I think.
I love telling when people ask us why our show is different. And there's lots of reasons, some good and some bad. But, I always really do hang our hat on the fact that we try to get people to think beyond No Limit Hold'em. We know people are going to play No Limit Hold'em. That's what you got to play. But you can think of some of these other games. I think you're going to have a lot more fun. And this is proof right here.
Yep, absolutely. It makes you use other muscles, and no more Viagra jokes, by the way. But I totally agree. I think that in Stud 8, it's such a beautiful game. It really is, and they are seeing that, and of course they're enjoying Raz. Eventually, they'll hate Raz just like everyone else. But
yeah.
But in the meantime, enjoy it, live it up, and start playing his other games too, like Four Card Ocean, Crazy Pineapple, or SpongeBob, as we've learned.
SpongeBob.
That's great, man. Love that letter. Thanks for sending it in.
All right, Timo and the rest of you guys, I'm going to try to talk our good friend Jason Holly into sending you a deck of Jade Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up, so you can use those when you're playing the show. I know it's an international shipment, so we'll see what we can do. But we'll do our best, and everybody else can get those wonderful cards in the Annie Up store at AnnieUpStore.com.
Well, we got a good call to floor this week. It comes from Frank Wolf, and I'll read it, and then you do Jody's side, okay? Because I'm dying to read this. It says, I run a regular Texas Hold'em tournament at a local fraternal organization. Buy-in is $20, but I try to run a professional tournament and follow Robert's rules when possible. We were 6 in at the final table. I was one of the 6. We're paying top 4. One of the players announced that he had to leave, grabbed his stuff, and left with chips still in play. He had about 15 big blinds, and I made a decision to leave the chips in play and blind him out. A couple of people asked whether he would be able to win any money if he made the final 4. I basically said yes, if 2 players would get eliminated prior to him blinding out, then yes, he would win some money. Then we lost someone, and there were 4 seated players left. The player who left had maybe 8 or 9 big blinds at that point. A heated argument started. The table's opinion was, if he did make it into the 4, then his portion would be added back into the prize pool and pay only 3. I put a stop to the argument, my tournament, my call. Please take into consideration, I was the big stack at this point and was basically taking money away from myself with this ruling. Did this floor make the right call?
Well, a couple things were interesting about this letter before we get to what Jody said is, one, he runs this tournament near where I went to school.
Oh, yeah?
So I always like connect with folks that... know in my old playgrounds there. So, Frank, have fun, and I'll see you next time I'm up there. And then, you know, I initially put this on the show a couple months ago, right?
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, we don't need Jody to answer this. This is a slam dunk, right? And then you're like, whoa, hold the phone there, Scotty. I don't know about that. I think I've seen it other ways. And I was like, what? Really? which is great, because then, you know, hey, that's why we have Jody. I was making a decision from the box. And I shouldn't be doing that.
Right.
You know, I should have called the floor. So that's exactly what we did. And then also, just a shout out to folks that run tournaments, too. Robert's Rules really is for cash games.
Right, I was going to say that, too.
Yeah, so you want to get into the poker TDA rules for tournaments. But, you know, hey, as long as you're using some kind of rules, that's better than a lot of home games or things like this.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, so here's what Jody says. He says, I completely agree with this decision. I would have probably declared that if the tournament got down to just 1 live player plus the missing player, that the tournament would be over at that point, and the missing player would be awarded 2nd place. Blinding off players is a common occurrence in tournament play. These absent players make winning more chips easier in the form of dead money, and they cannot win first place. It's a good deal for everyone at the table. Besides, if you can't beat a player who's absent, perhaps you should read a new poker book or take a new course. There are many available these days. consider this. A player at the final table of the World Series of Poker main event gets an emergency phone call and must rush to the hospital to be with a family member. Should take away the chips on the table and pay that player the current place? Or allow the chips to be blinded out on the off chance the player may return later? There would be several hundred thousand dollars, if not millions of dollars, in liability if that decision was made incorrectly. I commend you for taking the bull by the horns and making an unwavering decision. This is something that is tough for professional tournament directors and managers to do sometimes. Since this is a home game environment that is usually between friends and close acquaintances, I would suggest you make everyone aware that when any new situation arises in the future, you will make an immediate and unbiased decision, and afterwards you will poll the regular players to help create an agreed-upon procedure for future incidents of that nature. You may want to consider having a couple of your regulars agree to help in making these on-the-spot decisions so you can try to have the rulings made by someone who is no longer playing or is at least at a different table whenever possible.
And then, and of course, that point about the World Series, that's a great point, and that's the whole reason for it. You know, you could literally, let's say that there wasn't an emergency, but you wanted to fold your way into the money. Mm-hmm. You could just sit there and fold all those hands.
Right, yeah.
You know, and it's still your stack. Your stack is still there, and it's still paying for its hands. So you have no right to take that stack away, especially if he's that close. Now, some of it's a Deutsche Bank move if they think that they could just fold away into the money like they do online. You know, we just do that stuff. But really, you've paid for that. You've paid for that stack, and you could do whatever you want with it. And if that just means a dealer has to grab your cards instead of you literally pitching them in, then who are you to say he can't do that? You know. And I agree. I'm glad he did this, and I'm glad that he took a stand and did what he thought was right, and it was right. So good for him.
Well, and Frank, I think that the best part of Jody's response was the fact that somebody could come back. So in this in this case, it sounds like this guy said he had a leaving, wasn't coming back. But think about it. Tell your regulars that were upset about this decision. What happens if they get a call and they say, I'll be right back, and everybody says, well, no, hey, as soon as you leave the table, we're taking your chips. That's not fair to you if you can come back later on. I mean, you paid for that. So it's more the fact that somebody can come back. It's not the fact that they left, I think. It's a big decision in my mind.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely. You know,
pay that money. That chip stack stays there. Yep. And as Jody says, if you can't beat a dead stack, keep the game of Uno going or something like that.
Well, you can see somebody getting mad, though. Aces versus Kings or something. They get knocked out or whatever. But,
Yeah, absolutely. But that's poker. But, you know, if you remember to email your call the floor questions to podcast at annieupmagazine.com or post them in our forum at annieupmagazine.com/forum, and we'll have Jody answer them and put you on the straight and narrow.
Hey, you know, one cruise is over, but we got another one coming up.
We do. And we got plenty of places for people to win. And, you know, this cruise is a little bit more expensive than our normal ones, Chris.
Yeah, but that's
also 7 days.
Yeah, it's more days, yeah.
Nicer ship, better port, so, you know, it's worth it. But, you know, hey, you know, I would like to have a Lamborghini, but I can't afford it, right? starting this Saturday, there are going to be satellites and other giveaways from rooms from Florida to California, Chris.
Wow.
Where people can go and win their way in. For all those details, go to our website at annieupmagazine.com/cruise. And you could probably get on board pretty cheaply if you win there. And, of course, if you're a loser like I am and can't win anything, feel free to book directly with me. But do it by September 22nd so we can lock in that 619 rate after that. I will still be happy to book you, but I can't guarantee availability or price.
And if they can't play with us on that cruise, but they want to try to play with us locally here, we're going to be in Immokalee, which is near Fort Myers. It's the Seminole Casino down there. On September 24th, you and I are getting in the car and driving 3 hours together, which should provide some more hilarious fodder for the show. Scotty Wynn is going to be in town. They're having a tournament in his honor, and they're having one for the Antioch Poker Tour, too. And that's the one we'll be on. September 24th, we'll be there for that. Come out and say hi to us and you know, check Raise Me on the River.
Yeah, I've been actually surprised. We've gotten a number of emails from folks saying, hey, are you going to be out there? Well, yeah. I'm going to come out and see you, so kind of weird.
Yeah,
but looking forward to seeing people that we haven't seen before or we haven't seen in a while. So,
and I haven't seen that room since they've redone it, so I'm kind of excited to see it and get some poker in and say hi to Scotty and see what's going on down there.
Absolutely.
All right, let's see what news gathered up on our Antioch news desk this week.
Presque Isle Downs in Erie, Pennsylvania will open its 9-table poker room on October 3rd with an official grand opening featuring Chris Moneymaker planned for October 14th and 15th. And also Valley Forge Casino near Philadelphia says it will offer poker tournaments when it opens in the spring.
Boy, that Moneymaker, he gets around.
He does.
He likes the Philadelphia and Pittsburgh, you know, the whole Pennsylvania area. He's done some other stuff there, too, as well. So good for him and good for them. Another room giving us some content and our Pennsylvania listeners more places to play. So I'm very excited. And we know the person who's running that room, so that's real cool, too. Mike Timex McDonald won the second event of the fledgling Epic Poker League and more than $782,000. McDonald from Guelph, Ontario, has entered both Epic Poker League events via winning his seats in the Pro-Am. And I thought it was interesting that he's from that very famous poker player town now, Guelph. A guy who won a bracelet this year, Mark Rodoja, and then Gavin Smith and Steve Paul D'Ambrose. All these guys hail from that one area. It's pretty incredible.
You know, I'm going to just announce too, Chris, I'm going to go by Scott Cassio along.
Cassio.
From here on.
I know there's someone else's named Rolex too. I forget his name. He was on TV a couple times, but his nickname's like Rolex something or whatever. And I'm going to be Swatch.
Swatch, I like it.
Chris
like
Swatch.
All right, finally this week, South Point Casino in Las Vegas is the latest to announce it will open a free-to-play poker site on the growing Zen Entertainment Network, which also hosts sites for Jamie Gold and Card Player Magazine.
There you go. It's just a matter of time. They pass along. Everyone's going to have their own online site. I'm telling you, we're going to be rolling in it someday, baby.
Just priming the pump there.
All right, it's time to complete an O'Malley's move this week.
and welcome to another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. We are sitting in a $2-$4 PLO8 game, and have clearly overextended ourselves. We're playing at limits that are too high for what we're comfortable with, and against players that are at least two levels ahead of us. This has forced us to play way too tight and scared. We are by far the short stack at the table, with $341, as we've lost over $150 so far. There are 8 players at the table, and the average stack is over 1,000. Under the gun folds, under the gun plus one calls, with just under 1,500. He bought in for 1,000 and seems to be a very solid player. We're next to act and look down at ace of clubs, king of spades, king of clubs, three of hearts. Considering our present circumstance, we have to raise here. Even though raising generally telegraphs the strength of our hand, we just don't want to play this pot out of position against this table. With only $341 and the pot currently at $10, we make it $12 to go, hoping to buy the button with this bet. And we do. It's folded around to the big blind, another solid player, with around 1,000 behind. He calls, as does our original limper. The pot stands at $38, and the flop comes jack of clubs, eight of spades, deuce of diamonds. That's certainly not a Ricky Ticky Tavi flop, but we'll take it. We do still have an overpair, and have picked up the nut low draw. First to act checks, and our limp caller makes it 20 to go. We tank for a second, thinking of his possible range. Could he have flopped a set? Is he betting his own nut low draw? It's also likely he knows we have a big pair in the hole. Perhaps he thinks we're playing something like ace-ace, deuce-x, and he knows our low is counterfeited. But we're still pretty strong here. We have the nut low draw with a backdoor flush draw. Additionally, any king that comes on the turn will give us the nut high, with redraws to a boat. We make the call, as does the first to act. The pot is $98, and the turn is the three of clubs. Well, now our low really has been counterfeited. But we pick up a whole new series of outs to get the high. What's more, is it's checked around to us. We're on the nut flush draw, with a long shot draw at a winning low. Are we checking behind?
All right, I'm going to check and likely call, Chris.
Yeah.
You know, you're supposed to bet your draws in Omaha, but you got to remember the golden rule in split pot games is to scoop.
Yep.
And in this hand, I think it's unlikely we can do that. It's a very weird board, and we might be able to pick up half the pot, but I don't think we can reasonably push both players off, so I don't want to volunteer any money into a pot where I'm most likely to win half of it. If that, we might not get any of this.
Well, I completely agree. I'm hoping, I'm just going to check and hope the big blind doesn't bet pot, and then the under the gun guy shove, and then I'm priced out of it. You know, and I don't want to bet here and have the big blind pot it with a nut low, you know what I mean? And then I'm just going to get bet out of this pot, or then I'm like just scrambling to win half and hoping to win half. And I agree. I'm just checking and hoping to call a small bet or not even have to call a bet.
All right, Matty H001, who we heard from at the top of the show from Australia. That's his annieupmagazine.com/forum handle.
Awesome.
Posted in the forum with a very thoughtful response. And here's what he had to say. He says, although I can see a couple reasons just to check, probably named Scott and Chris, we should bet. We have 11 outs, 9 flush and 2 kings for the high hand, 16 outs for the low, 4 of which will scoop as part of the flush for high. Also, we have position, and our opponents have been rather passive, indicating weakness. One is checked twice while the other guy only bet half pot, usually a small bet in Omaha. Overall, we'd look around at around two-thirds of the pot. Should a club come on the river, we're going to be hard-pressed to get any more money in unless the board pairs. Thus, getting more money on the turn becomes more important for pot value. However, we do have issues around the low end with the 3 coming out. Now for anyone with ace-x, should their low card not pair on the river. Also, it's very possible that someone has trips or 2 pair here. That leaves a concern about the flush coming on the river while pairing. I can't see it being a 2 pair involving the jack unless our opponents played it with a flush draw, which seems unlikely. Any trips or 8s and 2s would fit the bill for someone also looking for the low hand. The counter to this thought is that the action has been rather slow for players with trips, and a lesser extent to pair would surely be more interested in protecting their hand or raising for a value. If we're going to get involved, it would be before the club on the river.
Yeah, interesting. I know we have the nut low draw and we have, you know, two kings, but I don't feel like betting here. It can get out of hand, and we can end up getting quartered for the low too, which is something else that we're not taking into consideration there. And
I mean, the low is limited here. I mean, we can still get a piece of the low, but we're already counterfeited now, so
yeah,
makes it much more difficult. And you're right, if somebody's sitting there with ace four, like you said, I mean, that's a strong hand at this point with this board.
Yeah,
and we would be raising with it, and then, you know, a lot of our outs are not really outs anymore.
Exactly.
I don't know.
All right, let's see what happens, and then we'll chime in again one more time.
Hello again. At this point, we have to believe we're at least beat on the low. But it could be possible that we still have the best high, and even if we don't, a bet here could push out a high like two pair, if they think we have a set. We've lost money so far tonight by playing scared, and we resolve right here that we're not going to play scared anymore. With $98 in the pot, we make it $75 to go. This leaves us with $234 behind. First to act calls our $75, and much to our chagrin, the limp caller raises it to $250. Are we getting whipsawed here? If we call this bet, we only leave ourselves with $59 behind, and all we have is a draw at the nut high and a wing and a prayer for the best low. Nine clubs give us the nut flush, and two kings also give us a nut high, but two of the clubs potentially pair the board, so we're really only looking at nine outs to give us the nut high, and with only one card to come. We look at our humble stack of 234 and very nearly put it in the middle. But what would that accomplish? With our chips in one hand and our cards in another, we throw the cards into the muck and watch the action unfold. First to act calls the 250. The pot is 873, and the river is the 8 of hearts. First to act checks again, and our original limp caller looks down at his cards and mumbles, "Well, since we're splitting anyway, I check." First to act turns over, ace of spades, queen of spades, 4 of diamonds, 3 of diamonds, for the nut low, and decent counterfeit protection once that 2 came on the flop. The limp caller grunts and turns over his king of hearts, queen of clubs, jack of spades, jack of hearts, the nut high from the flop, and the nut full house by the river. So it turns out we did save ourselves money in the end. Maybe next week we'll try to find a softer seat somewhere. Back to the friendly home game? I guess we'll just have to see where our poker travels take us. Until next time, I'm Malcolm O'Malley, and I hope to see you on the felt.
Well, I'm not going to say I told you so, Chris.
Not me. You tell them.
I told you so. But no, because it easily could have gone our way as well, too. But, I've just seen a lot of people lose a lot of money playing for half the pot. But what I think is more interesting is here is I wonder what the raiser would have bet had we and the other opponent checked the turn. You know what?
Yeah.
Instead of betting out our $75 and then having him raise, if we just checked, probably the other guy checks, and then I'd be interested how much he puts in. He's not going to put, obviously, $250 in. Maybe he puts in less than $75, and then we save a little bit more money.
Yeah.
Because when that river comes, we're not putting anything else in there.
Right. You know, you totally agree. I mean, you would have probably gotten away with spending the same amount of money and seeing the river and knowing what happened and gotten away from it. Whereas this way, you pay it, don't get to see the river, and lose your opportunity to make your hand both ways or whatever. So I agree. What's wrong with checking there? You know, I see Matt wants to bet, but to me, checking, because, you know, it shows you right there. If we had bet like he said, then the guy makes it 250 like he did, then what do you do? Are you calling, Matt? I don't think you are. So I agree with the check and not the bet. And, you know, it's pretty much what I was hoping wouldn't happen.
Yeah, and that's not a result-oriented analysis of the hand. I just think it's interesting to think, you know, if we didn't do one thing, what would have happened?
Right.
And obviously we don't know, but I think it's worth thinking about what might have happened. You know, and like I said, I mean, the flush could have got there in the end. You know, another low card could have got there, and we could have got, you know, some pieces of this thing. But, yeah. You know, I when I'm big and bold, I want to have outs to both pots. And the low pot just wasn't there for me this time.
Right. And again, to get back to the not results-oriented, before we even heard the last part, I said, what I want to do is check and hope that they don't bet and knock me out of this hand. And that's exactly what happened. So yeah. I wouldn't have bet, and I would have seen that river for $75. So, and it's just another reason why PLO8 is the bastardized devil's game. Don't play it. You want stuff like this to happen to you? Okay, but if you don't play this game.
Hi, this is Greg Raymer, better known as the Fossil Man, and you are listening to Annie Up.
Federated Sports and Gaming's innovative Epic Poker League and Global Poker Index debuted last month, and joining us today to catch us up with what is new with the league is its commissioner, Annie Duke. Annie, thanks for joining us today, and we know it's early out there in Las Vegas.
Actually, I'm in L.A.
Oh, you're in L.A., so it's even,
still,
well.
Still early here, too.
I was going to say, it's not even earlier. All right, well, we're two events into the Epic Poker League. How did the first events go, and what are you looking forward to in the near future?
Actually, really, really pleased with how they've gone. I mean, we have a great team, and it what amazes me is that it doesn't feel like it's a team that's putting on its first or second event. You know, things were really smooth. I mean, with the first event, we had a couple hiccups with, like, registration and some sort of details of some logistical issues that we quickly solved, you know, in the 2.5 weeks in between, and everything was much, much smoother for event two. And I was just really pleased. The poker was great. I've seen some of the footage. It's really beautiful. You know, really couldn't be happier.
You know, we recently held an Annie Up event at the Palms Key West Room, which seems to be a great place for the Epic Poker League. How is that association going with the Palms, and do you anticipate remaining there after the first season?
Well, we have a 5-year deal with them, so
okay.
Definitely planning to continue to run events there. Things are going really well. I think that it's a really good home for us. I the setup upstairs is actually really great because it's very private. So when we're running the main events, you know, we're actually running not out of Key West. So the pro-ams are out of Key West.
Right.
The main events are out of the ballroom up on the second floor. And it's a really great private area because there's sort of a lounge area outside. And one of the pieces of feedback that we got from the members between event one and event two was that they really wanted some different games out in the front. So we set up 2 ping pong tables, air hockey, foosball. You know, and the pros come out on break and everybody's playing ping pong. And it's actually a really good setup. So super happy with the relationship.
Very cool.
Huh. Sounds like the headquarters of Google there. Well,
yeah, and actually it was really nice for me because, like, during some of the longer stretches during the main event, like during dinner break or whatever, I got to go play some ping pong too. So I enjoyed it.
All right, well, many people were surprised when it was announced that Federated bought the Heartland Poker Tour, but I figured it solved one of the skeptics of Epic's biggest questions. Where you guys were going to get your television coverage from. But then you guys announced a broadcast deal with CBS and Velocity. So I'm curious, as what interest does a league focused on pros have with a tour series that caters mostly to amateurs if it's not going to use its...
Well, because it's only one of the things that we do that's the pro-focused league. I mean, that's the reason why the company isn't Epic Poker, it's Federated Sports and Gaming. So... we have broader ideas in mind, including, for example, the Facebook game, the social media game that's running right now. People can go find that, if you search Epic Poker on Facebook. And honestly, our interest in the Heartland Poker Tour is that it's a great company. Greg Lang and Todd Anderson really built just an incredible business that has, you know, what I would call sort of a level of cult following. And we just loved that business. And we're interested in being in the poker space, not just the pro space. So we've obviously got the Epic Poker League, which is very, very focused, obviously, on the pros and membership and qualification. But that doesn't mean that we want to ignore this whole other sector you know, of the poker population and not serve them well as well. All poker players are really important to us, and it was a way for us to encompass, you know, the other 99% of the people out there.
Well, you know, you mentioned the first event, and it got a lot of high praise, but there was the Chino Ream situation where everyone, you know, owed money to people and stuff like that. The league's ethics committee later put him on probation. How difficult was that to deal with right out of the gate like that?
Well, I mean, you know, it was sort of, it was very much sort of a double-edged sword. I mean, you know, obviously if we had a choice, we wouldn't have wanted to have any controversy coming out of the gate. But that being said, the Standards and Conduct Committee began to be set up really a year ago. We started talking about it in September of 2010. You know, did a big search, found Stephen Martin, who's the chair of the committee, who's fantastic. We started working on sort of how that committee was going to be set up. You know, got the players who are on the committee on board. You know, worked on the code of conduct, disciplinary policy, so on and so forth. So these were situations that we, you know, definitely foresaw. And so I think that we were actually well set up to deal with the situation. And the process itself actually went really smoothly. Chino, I cannot tell you how great Chino was in the process. I think that the process went as smoothly as it could have because, you know, we were planned for this kind of thing, you know, well in advance. You know, obviously, again, that being said, you know, would I prefer to have just a smooth event with no controversy right out of the gate? Of course, but... you know, when you're making some tough stands, you're going to have some tough situations, and, you know, you just hope that you rise to the occasion.
Well, Randy Casper is one of our columnists here at Annie Up. He's also an agent for Poker Pros, and he raves about Epic's logo policy. So I feel a little odd questioning it, but I was surprised at how restrictive it seemed for a league focused on pros who depend on endorsement deals. Can you tell us a little bit about how what the discussion was like when developing that policy?
Well, I'm actually curious as to why you find it restrictive, because I think that if you compare it to other logo policies of, say, the two other major tournament brands out there, you'll find that we're actually less restrictive in terms of both the number of logos that we allow, the number of logos that we allow at the final table. You know, our only restriction is that you can't be currently offering real money gaming in America, and there's obvious reasons for that given the events of April 15th. But I think that, you know, I've used the logo policy as actually quite liberal from a pro standpoint. So I'm curious as to what you find restrictive about it.
Yeah, I definitely think it's more liberal than the other ones out there. I guess I've never quite understood why there's a limit on the number of people wearing a particular patch at a final table.
That's really simple. Those things have to do with your ability to bring in mainstream sponsorship. And that's not just about the league, but that's about the players as well. If you're focused on bringing in mainstream sponsorship into the game and really good sponsors into the game, those sponsors are also going to end up sponsoring players as well. So you're really looking to sort of build sponsorship that's outside of the poker space for the players. And in order to do that, you can't have a show that ends up sort of looking like an infomercial. And so there's really good reasons in terms of the long-term health of the sponsorship for the players, actually, for limiting the number of logos that could actually be seen at the final table. So you don't want to have, you have a final table of nine, you don't want all nine to be wearing the exact same logo. It's bad for the players in the long run to allow that.
Okay.
I just remember when we, back when we were doing the show a while ago, we had talked to the commissioner, and he had said something about, this is back when it was in the World Series, and he had said, you know, oh, because he was from NASCAR, and he had said, oh, my dream is to have them wear as many logos as they wanted. So now where he's in charge of a league with you, I figured he would want to do a lot of logos on the players.
Oh, no. So you misunderstood him, because we did actually execute that. You'll notice is that the number of different sponsors that a player could have is unlimited, and that's actually very unusual in the space.
Okay.
So we don't tell you, oh, you can only have two different patches on. If you want to wear 20 different patches, go right ahead. Right?
Okay.
The limit is only on the number of players that can be wearing a single brand. Right? So... you as an individual can have 20 sponsors.
Okay.
But one of those sponsors can't have a patch on everybody at the final table.
Not very good. You know, so other stuff that's going on in your life, obviously your new book, Decide to Play Great Poker, which you collaborate on with John Voorhaus, is a tremendously popular and critically acclaimed. How happy are you with its success, and what makes it different from other Hold'em strategy books?
Well, to answer the first part of the question, I'm ecstatic because this book was really long time in the sort of getting out. And one of the reasons why it was a long time for me to get it out was because it's actually very terrifying to release a book of this type into the public, because that's when you're sort of releasing your thoughts about the game and how you think about the game for people to really dissect and examine. And that's scary, because that's the moment where you could fail, right?
Right.
That's the moment where people can say, where the book just sort of thuds and nobody wants to buy it, and you go to Amazon and all the reviews are about how ridiculous the book is. And that's really scary to actually execute that. So, you know, I finally got up the nerve to get, you know, do the final edit and get it out. And obviously the way that it's received, you know, my fears were premature, which was good. But that's actually really amazing, because it's different than other kinds of books, because you're really sort of splaying out, you know, this is the way I think about poker. This is my sort of conceptual take on the game, and just wide open on the page for anybody to see. So obviously the fact that that's been, you know, received very well has been an amazing experience for me. It's been a really incredible summer for me seeing the reception for the book. To answer your question about what's different about it, I think that I ended up with a very different take on poker than other people, really because I'm a woman. And the reason is that, you know, what I had found when I was kind of growing up as a poker player and I was trying to read other people's books was that the books were very prescriptive, meaning that they gave you rules and they gave you charts. So, you know, when I first started playing, people would quote, like, oh, that's not a group A hand or something like that, where
right.
somehow there was some sort of prescription about what hand you were allowed to play in early position, middle position, late position. They would give you set up scenarios where this is where you're supposed to bluff or that kind of thing. And there were all these rules, you could raise three times the big blind, whatever it might be. And the fact is that those rules worked really poorly for me. And I think that the reason why those rules worked really poorly for me is because I'm a woman. So naturally, people would have very different reactions to me at the table than they would to the author. And what I felt like was happening in the books that I was reading was the author had come up with a strategy that worked really well for them and who they were as an individual and what their image was. And then they were sort of putting that strategy out to the world in terms of the rules that they follow. But the problem is those rules don't apply to everybody. And they
right.
certainly didn't apply to me. So I ended up really having a very different take on the game, I think, than other people did, because I was perceived so differently at the table than other people. So what this book is about is addressing that problem. So it starts off very clearly saying this is not a book that has charts. It's not a book that's going to give you rules. It's not going to tell you raise three times the big blind or play this hand in early position or whatever it might be. It's going to give you concepts and the why of what you do things so that you can generate the rules that are going to work for you as an individual no matter what game you're in. And I think that that's where I really split off, because other books are like, this is a book for low limit play, or this is a book for tournament play, or this is a book for whatever. And the reason why they're giving you a book that's specifically for low-limit play is because it's a strategy that the author has figured out works well in low-limit.
Right.
And what I would rather do is give you a book that's about the general concepts and the whys of poker, so that no matter what situation I put you in, whether it's low-limit or high-limit or early stage of the tournament or late stage of the tournament or whatever, you can generate your own rules that are going to work really well for you.
Well, it's really refreshing to hear that, Andy, because I think that's one of the things that I've noticed myself is that, you know, people do things blindly without really understanding why. They said, oh, so-and-so told me to do that way. And
right.
so it's really refreshing to hear and trying to get to the why, because you could, you know, one of the things I talk to people about on our Hand of the Week segment is that particular hand is never going to happen again. So you
right.
need to understand the whys of it to apply it to a hand that's going to be similar but not exactly the same. So,
well, that's why, yeah, and what I say to people is that, you know, when you're trying to tell a hand to a pro and you're saying, well, what do you do with pocket queens? And they say to you, it depends. They're not blowing you off.
Right.
They're actually telling you the truth. They want to know, like, well, what is your image? Who's been winning and losing? How have your opponents been behaving? What do the stack sizes look like? Who's on your left? Who's on your right? Are you in a tournament? Are you in a cash game? Are you in early position? Are you in late position? You know, how's the table behaving? Like, all of those things really matter to how you're going to play an individual hand of poker. And so if all I do is tell you about individual hands that I've played, I'm asking you to have to extrapolate all the general concepts and the whys. And that's just a ridiculous ask of me to get you then to be able to go out and play really well. And, you know, one of the most sort of clear moments for me about why this is really important is when I first started teaching, you know, through WSOP Academy, I asked a class once, well, tell me all the reasons that you should raise a hand. And I got just these incredible blank stares. They were like, well, you should raise three times the big blind. I was like, no, I understand that. You think that, but why are you raising?
Yeah.
And they said, well, because you're supposed to. And I was like, well, no, that's not what. That, what are you talking about? And they're like, well, because I have a really good hand. I said, really? Oh, have you ever raised with a bad hand, like on the button? Well, yes. Okay, so it's not because you have a really, and I'm trying to walk through this. And what I realized is all these people who considered themselves to be pretty strong intermediates, I mean, they had paid over $1,000 to come to a camp, couldn't answer this very simple question for me of why you raise. And I said, that's a big problem. These are people who've read a lot of poker books, who are clearly motivated to learn. They're at my camp, and they can't tell me the simplest of things. I mean, raising is probably the thing you do the most at the table. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they couldn't tell me why.
Wow.
And I said, well, that's a problem. I got to write a book.
Well, we're definitely glad you did. And, you know, I had talked to you last year at Derby Lane in St. Petersburg, and we had discussed the prospects of regulating internet poker in the U.S., and you had high hopes that the legislation would pass before the lame duck session, which didn't happen. Now it's almost exactly a year since we last talked, and in that time you've left UB, Black Friday hit us, and some legislation teased us here and there. How do you feel about the future of online poker now?
You know, I still think that it's basically just a when and not an if on, you know, regulation of online poker. You know, I my concern is if it doesn't happen this year, I don't really see it happening during the election year. Right. So I feel like it's a little bit do or die right now in terms of making sure that it happens, you know, this fall. And if it doesn't, then I think that you're looking at 2013. Now, this is just obviously my layman's opinion, but, you know, I don't know what you guys think, but I think it's going to be difficult to get anything passed in the election year. So, you know, it came really close last year, you know, in November, it was super, super close. You know, there was a bill, it was going to be introduced, you know. It looked really, really good. And then at the last minute, it just didn't happen. And this is the way the legislative process happens. And I think it's a good lesson for all of us. You know, I think we all kind of had our backs turned in 2005. You know, like, right. Oh, nothing's going to happen. You know, oh, we heard these rumblings, but nobody really thought anything bad was going to happen. And you turn your back for a second, and all of a sudden something's attached to the port security bill, you know, and the game you love has been, you know, really damaged by a law that says you can't process payments to play. And the real truth of the matter is that it's harder to undo something than it is to get something done in the first place. And this is an undoing that people are trying to get to happen. But I think that the interest, you know, I think there's enough aligned interests. I think that, you know, I think the U.S. sees the revenue potential for what can come from the game. There's a lot of really good models out there for regulated poker among our allies. So I really do think that it's basically a fait accompli. It's just a matter of when it actually happens and, you know, really rooting for it to happen this fall, obviously.
Well, Annie, we really appreciate you joining us. We know you're busy, so we'll let you get back to work. But before you leave us, remind our listeners where they can learn more about Epic Poker League and Federated Sports and Gaming and when they can see it on TV.
Sure. So we're going to be announcing the TV schedule this week, actually. Very excited about it, but you should look for that to start at the end of the month. You're going to be able to see it on Velocity, which is, some people have said that that's a new channel, but it's actually, there's a channel called Discovery HD, which most people have on their carriers. Mm-hmm. I have it on DirecTV. And it is, you know, part of the Discovery Networks, obviously. And they're rebranding that as Velocity. So that's where we're going to be in terms of the preliminary rounds, and then the final part, you know, the final rounds, like the final tables, are going to be over on CBS. We're going to have 20 original hours of programming this year, 13 on Velocity and 7 on CBS with generous re-airs, and we're super excited about that. So people should look out for that. Go to epicpoker.com, and you can find out all the information about that. You can find out about upcoming events, how you can get into the Epic Poker League, because there is a way for people who don't have cards to qualify through the pro-ams. In fact, we had a pro-am finisher at the final table of our main event, and that gave him provisional eligibility. So we're going to see him again now in December.
Awesome.
Which is really cool. So his name is Sean Getzwiller. He doesn't have a card, and, you know, he played the pro-am. Nate actually won a seat in the first pro-am, didn't cash, but then in the second pro-am, he made the final table, in the second main event, rather, which was really cool. So
cool.
People can find out about that over on epicpoker.com as well. And if you want to buy my book, just go to Amazon.
Awesome. Thanks, Annie. Appreciate your time today.
Hi, this is Shannon Elizabeth, and you are listening to the Antietta PokerCast.
All right, long-time listener, first-time writer, Chris, named Tom Turley.
First-time writer? Yeah, right.
Oh, you know, Tom's been with us from the very beginning. In fact, you know, on a recent trip, he called me when I was driving around. I think it was in Reno. And I answered the phone, and I'm like, I'll take a large pizza,
yes,
pepperoni sausage. And it took him about a half an hour to quit laughing. So I make somebody laugh.
And you know, that was one of the first times you and I were Natalie and Brulia with the show. Because that was like the first gift ever sent to us. And we're like, okay, can we have this? And then like I remember our boss was like, you can each have one slice.
Okay, that makes sense.
And then share it with everyone else. Because then it's, you know, I'm like, all right. So, you know, we had a slice, and we were apparently
not. What you didn't know is we can put a lot of pizza in that one slice. I turned that one slice into a calzone.
That's right. We stacked it up. And but, yeah, that's right. Tom was pizza boy for the longest time. He sent us a pizza back boy. In the old times days.
And he's still sending us gifts. He sent me a couple movies and stuff, too, that I haven't got to, and I know it's driving crazy. But now, this week, he sent us a hand of the week, and that's what's important.
Yep.
And, of course, he says it's an interesting hand I played last night. And, again, I got to remind our listeners, we're the judge of whether it's interesting or not, all right?
You're right.
It's your hand. Of course it's interesting. Narcissistic people out there. For sure it is, or it wouldn't be on the show. Now, he likely, Childs, is playing a lot up at Hollywood Charlestown, which is the closest room to the D.C. area, and was playing 2-5 no limit and had been playing pretty well. He was seeing a lot of flops with speculative hands and hitting. Bought in for $400 and built it up to over $1,600, Chris.
Of course he did.
And then back to $900.
Okay. Well, at least he admits that.
All right. He sat down at 11 p.m. and planned to leave at 4 a.m., but ended up staying a little later, tried to build it back up. Oh, boy. That's never good, right?
Not good.
Oh, I'll play one more round. And then you're calling for a cab because you had to the car to guy in the seat six. It says that in Connecticut there's a 6-hour half-hour charge. Or I'm sorry, not Connecticut. It's a CT.
Yeah, Charlestown.
Connecticut, right? But no, it's a Charlestown here. There's a 6-hour half-hour charge, and so you would get all. This is like a rake show.
Yeah, it is.
6-hour half-hour charge, and at 5:30 a.m. when a newer came in, I said I was rolling at 6 a.m. Sure, you were. playing 7-hand at this time, and a hand came up. I was in the big blind, and there was a standard $10 strudel. Also known as a straddle.
Also known as a straddle, yes.
there were three callers, and it came back around to me. I looked down at tray of clubs, four of clubs.
Am I supposed to react to that?
I'm just letting it soak in for a while that he has one of the most craptastic hands in poker right now.
Yeah.
Apparently he's going to play because this is hand of the week, and that's how it happens. So the straddle is still to act. So remember that even though we're in the big blind, you got the straddle guy under the gun, and he gets the last action. So three callers at $10. Cost us an extra $5 a call. What do we do?
Oh, we're calling. We're getting like 8.5, 9-1 on our money or whatever. We got 3-4 suited. Hey, what the hell? I'm calling $5. And if the straddle does, you know, the crazy straddle raise thing, we'll reassess. But for $5 to see if he's going to just check, you know, that's great.
Interesting enough, we got another letter from a frequent writer this week, and we'll probably talk about it a little bit on a future show. But one of the points I was making to her was, and that we make in Poker 101, and of course it's a 2-5 no-limit game, so completely different. But you know, we have people in the small blind go, why shouldn't I just put the dollar in? It's only a dollar.
Yeah.
You know? And so what I always tell them is, hey, you know, that somebody offers you a beat-up, broken-down car at a discount. Do you buy it? Oh, my God, it's a discount. I got to buy it. No, it's still a broken-down car, right? So even though it's at a discount, it may not be worth it. So I'm not saying that's the case here, but what I'm saying is when you go into a hand with a craptastic hand like this, and you're going to buy it at a discount. Remember that it's damaged goods. And it better drive sweet off the lot after that.
That's the thing, is you don't know, though. This could be a car that drives really well. Or
yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah,
could be.
If you get into it and you know it's all pimped up and it's got neons and nitrous oxide, all right, cool. Drive it home. But if you get into it and your foot falls to the floorboard and you're Fred freaking Flintstone, just remember that you don't need to put some duct tape on that floorboard. You can just leave that car, abandon it, right?
You got it for a discount.
Yeah. All right. Well, and the other thing, too, I think, is you got the straddle to act after you. So, you know, we got to consider whether it is going to be just $5 more for us. And we don't know anything more than what he says. So, you know, some straddlers like to raise all the time.
Right.
If that's the case, that changes this immensely for me. Because I'm willing to put $5 in here. I'm not willing to put 50 in this thing, right?
Well, here's the thing, is it's standard, he said. That's the thing that gets me to want to call $5. Because if it's just some one guy at the table is being an idiot and he is a perpetual razor when he's a straddle, that's one thing. But if they're all made to straddle, then maybe this guy is just one of those ones that's trying to play a 2-5-10 game and it's just sitting in the big in the quote third blind or whatever. You know, so
That's an excellent point. But what I'm trying to say is you gotta know whether that guy is
if he's gonna do it or not.
Also aggressive with his straddle or not. Right. Because I don't want to put more than $5 in until I see whether this car drives.
Right.
Right?
Of course, if I have 900 in front of me like he does, I think I can afford $5 to even make the mistake of this guy raising it now. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
All right. All right, well, our hero calls the additional $5, and the straddle does his best Babu twirling. This is best Babu?
His best Babu twirling his index finger, you know, like from Seinfeld. And Seinfeld. I don't believe you don't know that reference. You know,
I know.
It's been
a while.
It's crazy.
Sorry.
And he goes, "You're a very bad man." And he puts his finger back and forth. You know,
his best Babu.
Best Babu.
Twirling. See, that's what I was trying to figure out. I was trying to figure out the cadence here. His best Babu. Twirling his index finger, indicating he checked.
Yeah.
Now it all makes sense. You gotta see the baby. All right. The flop comes down. Tray of hearts, four of hearts, tray of spades.
Oh my God.
All right. I'm guessing our car drives well, right?
I guess it's a Porsche underneath that.
It's a keeper.
Good God.
Here it says bingo, bango, bungo. What a flop.
He said bungo?
Bungo, yeah.
Bungo, okay.
Well, everybody's got their own sayings.
Yeah.
He says in this game, the standard raise was $30 pre-flop, and most times they were 3 to a flop and a lot of c-betting. All solid players, and I was hoping someone was on a big flush draw. That's what he's thinking, and he's first to act.
Oh, I'll check. Obviously, you've pretty much crippled the deck here, and the only hands that are going to, you know, you want some hands to catch up. I don't want to be crazy with it either, because, you know, anybody could have a pocket pair of, like, fives or something, or sixes, and then if they hit that card, we're pretty much drawing to quads. So, but I think I would check if they are as aggressive as he says, and we're out of position, it would look like we've missed this, and we're out of position, and get a check raise in somewhere. So I agree with checking if that's what he wants to do.
Yeah, I don't see any reason to bet out here, because you're going to get some dead money put in the spot, and then, you know, if you want to check raise on the flop, you got that option. You know, I might even slow play one more street here, depending on how frisky the table is.
Yeah.
But putting some money in now, I think, is an action killer. All right, so our hero does check and hopes someone's a bet so he could check raise. So, all right, so got the same thinking. Sure enough, under gun plus one bets $15. We get a folder, the button calls, and it comes back to us.
Yeah, I mean, I'll raise. Normally we would do what? 3 times, but now there's a call or 2, so I'd maybe make it 60 or 75 to go, something like that.
All right, well, this is what I'm wondering. I don't have a problem check raising here, obviously, but I wonder, because the board is pretty darn strong for us here, whether we take a chance here and just call and hopefully maybe a heart will come or something and have some hearts or something that we don't really worry too much about. You're right. Any card that comes could be a higher boat for someone. So,
right.
But I think that's being a little too scared.
No, I agree. It's just that there's 2 people out there. That's the only thing.
Absolutely,
I would rather be heads
absolutely.
Up. But no, I can see both sides of this. It's just you're never going to be comfortable unless the card is a deuce. You're never going to be comfortable what comes next unless it's a 3 or a 4. So I just feel like I've got a pretty decent pot going. I've had a good night going, and I can get heads up with one of these guys, maybe even on the gun plus one. Maybe he has, like, solo playing aces or something. Maybe he has a nut flush draw or whatever. So I don't think I'll lose one of these players if I make it 75 to go.
That's a good point. You know, it is at the end of the night. Of course, we've been at the end of the night four times tonight.
That's true, too.
All right, well, a hero check raises to $50. Not enough, you don't think?
I don't know. That might be enough to get someone out. But, yeah, the check raise is telling the whole world that you have at least a three, and you know, especially in a big blind. So I think your hand is pretty much face up on the table now that you have at least a three in your hand and that they're going to have to hit something really big to beat you. So, but, yeah, I mean, if I'm going to do that, I want to get as much money as I can out of somebody, and maybe 50 is not enough to do it. So.
All right, the end of the gun plus one, who started the madness, folds. Now he's heads up with a button because the button calls.
Okay, well, we got what we wanted. I think we probably would have gotten it. Now, this is when you got to start to put the hand together. You know, what could he be doing that with? Nut flush draw, like a suited ace, over pair, like eights or something, or sixes or something, because, you know, what hands do you typically limp with? Suited aces, smaller pairs, maybe a jack 10, but he's obviously, you know, probably not playing jack 10 here, unless it's a jack 10 of hearts. But so, yeah, so okay, so I'm putting him on a baby pair or a suited ace, like a suited ace of hearts, you know. So that's the two hands. If I had to narrow it down, what would he call with there? Or he could have the other three, but, you know, like a suited ace three of clubs, or he would have the clubs, so ace three of diamonds or something. But that's about it. And if I think if he had that, he probably would have raised earlier. So I'm going to go with nut flush draw or like sixes.
Yeah, I think really the nut flush draw is what sounds pretty good to me. I mean, I guess, I mean, if you've got a small pair here, you gotta be not believing our check raise, right?
Right. You could think the guy has a four in his hand.
That's if you're believing that we have a three, then you're not going to make this call on a two outer, right?
Right.
So you got to be putting us on either a four or a bluff.
Yeah.
And that's tough. You know, I don't know. I'm not at the table.
Yeah, I agree with that. I guess I wasn't thinking about what I said before about my hand's face up now. Really, it really is. So if he's calling, he has to be something that he thinks he can beat us with. So yeah, you're right. It either has to be another three with an ace, like an ace three of diamonds. But then again, he may have bet that differently up to this point. So, yeah, it feels like nut flush draw, doesn't it?
Well, it does. Or like I said, I mean, he doesn't believe us, which could be possible. Yeah. I mean, and, you know, we've obviously, we bought him for 400, ran up to 1600, lost 900, so we're having a good day. So, you know, and we play some speculative hands, he says. So it's all about what he thinks. You know, maybe we're just trying to steal it here.
Yeah.
And, you know, if I have, well, you're right. I mean, I don't know. I don't know another pair he would have, really, that he wouldn't have raised preflop with on the button. So you're right. Yeah, I think maybe dangerous, but I've kind of narrowed it down to a weird three or a not flush draw.
Yep. And really, what three could it be other than ace three of diamonds?
Right.
If, because he's on the button, why would he have limped with 3-5 or something? So, or it could be the same hand, 3-4, but I doubt the button's doing that. So, yeah, I'm going to say nut flush draw, see what happens.
All right, the turn comes to 5 of hearts. So our board now is 3 hearts, 4 hearts, 3 of spades, 5 of hearts. And he said he was hoping the button hit this flush, and I was planning to trap, and I checked.
Okay.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we just talked about that we narrowed it down to really it was probably the nut flush draw, right?
Right.
If that's the case, he hit his hand. And the best chance we have is to get some money out of him is to show that we're scared of that, and hopefully he bets. Right?
Yeah, you know, I'm fairly certain that I saw an email from him after this, and he said it was the 5 of spades on the turn.
Oh, that's right. I'm sorry.
Because if it's the 5 of hearts, then it's the nut flush already, and the whole betting is changing.
You are correct. Yeah, thank you for correcting.
All right, so so it's the 5 of spades that comes
five
here,
of spades
right?
Now, yes.
Can
never trust our readers. Send us a clean email with a proper. But thanks for catching that.
All right, so basically no nut flushes have gotten there yet.
Right.
Right, so there's 2 spades, 2 hearts, and we still have a boat. So, like I said before, if a guy had pocket fives and didn't believe us, thought he was bluffing or thought we had a four, well, now he's killed us. But that's the one hand. It's the only hand you have to worry about. So I don't think we're going to worry about that. And I don't know if checking is the right move. I want to get bets in now while I can.
Well, yeah, now that the heart's not there, it changes my opinion. I thought it was the heart. So with the spade, it's a little different. I want to keep the pressure on here. You know, I guess the other thing that we didn't talk about on the flop, though, was a straight draw. I mean, if we're playing crap cards like this, somebody else could be played in 5-6 or something like that in an unraised pot. Of course, the 5 doesn't help that, really.
Right.
But, I mean, I guess that's another thing we should consider. It's not just hearts. It can be straight draws.
Here's the thing. Is if you're right with the 5-6, or say the guy has ace-5 of hearts, you know, then he's made a 5. So now he's thinking, okay, now I've got a pair, and I've got a straight draw, and I've got a flush draw. And he's got all these things, so you're not going to lose him. So let's get the bet in now.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, yeah. So, you know, if you're thinking that way, then you're thinking the 5 helped his hand, so let's bet. So I don't like checking at all.
All right. Okay, so we check, and it's check behind.
Ooh, interesting.
You have a free card.
Feels even more like a flush draw.
Well, again, if it's a flush draw, then we're happy.
Yeah, no, I know. It just feels like that. So if it gets there on the river, we're going to be value town. So
yeah, and it's going to be tough for us to lose, I think. I mean, I'm just thinking off my top of my head. I mean, if he had a flush draw, is there any way we could lose his hand?
Let's see. If he has, like I said, ace-5 of hearts, he could. A 5 could come.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, it could be a straight plus. So, steel wheel.
Or right. A steel wheel, too. A deuce could come. Deuce of hearts. So.
Yeah.
There's basically only a couple of hands that can beat us right now, the way it's playing out, if it's a flush draw. So.
Okay. Well, the river comes another 5.
Dope. That's not good.
So our final board is 3 hearts, 4 hearts, 3 of spades, 5 of spades, and a random 5.
Well, if the guy had 5-6 of hearts, like you said, he'd have an open and a straight flush draw, and now he's end up making a bigger boat than us. If he had ace-5 of hearts, like I said, you know, he's got a bigger boat than us. So, this sucks. you know, the hands that we're putting him on, I mean, he could have, like, ace-7 of hearts and not have anything, you know, now. Just 2 pair with an ace kicker. So, wow. I don't think that I'm going to check my boat, though. I mean, I know it's hand of the week, and generally we're always screwed in hands of the week, so... but I still don't think I'm going to check my boat again. I'm going to have to put something out there and see what happens.
All right, well, our hero says, crap! Thinks about it for a few seconds, and I think he did a hit his flush, so that must have been the 5 hearts on the end there. Okay. Now, was he thinking he was trapping me? Did he have a 5? So he ends up checking his boat. And his opponent fires out 225 clams.
That's crazy. Well, I mean, you got to let it go. You got to believe this guy has a 5 in his hand. I mean, it's a big bet. It's a big bet, but...
See, it's a big bet, which, you know, I'm not saying that you should call shenanigans on him here, but I don't think I can completely rule out the fact that he's just betting big and hoping to push us off his hand.
Well, here's the thing, is I'm feeling like he knows I have a 3 and that my hand was face up earlier, so now that he's got the 5... because he had 5-6 or ace-5 or something, that he's totally counting on us not being able to fold our hand with a third 3 in our hand or even a full house. That's what it feels like. I mean, it could feel like, yeah, he's bluffing, and how many times have we said it on the show, or the big bet on the end means a bluff, and then every time we say that, it's not a bluff. So I don't know. I mean, to me, it sounds like this guy knows we have a 3 because we told him we had a 3 with our betting, and...
we told him we had a 3 with our betting on the flop.
Right.
But I think we set up him to bluff on the river, whether we meant to or not, by checking the turn and the river. Yeah. Well, I mean, think about this. If you were talking about if we were just bluffing on the flop, we played it exactly like that. We called out the big blind. A scary board came. Some guy put out a bet, and then we check raised, hoping that everybody would fold. But we had this stubborn guy that called, and then we're like, all right, fine. You got me. I'm going to check. All right, I'm going to check. And then the guy says, all right, he must not be that strong, so if I put out a big enough bet, he's going to have to think really hard about whether to call. I think it's a pretty effective bet regardless of what the guy has.
Yeah, that's one way to look at it. I guess another way is to look at it like the 5 on the turn made us with just a naked 3, which we don't have a naked 3, but as a player, made it look like we have a naked 3. And the 5 was scary because now it's more coordinated and something could have gotten there. And then the check on the end makes the naked 3 even more scary because a naked 5 beats them. So in my in my side, if I'm the villain here and I'm positive this guy has a naked three, and now I've hit my 5-5 running, I know he can't fold his full house because there's no way he's going to put me on a 5 here. He may put me on a bluff, and that's why I'm betting 225. So I think I'm letting it down. I only lost $60 on this hand, and I'm up, what, to 900 or whatever it was he said. So I think I can lay this hand down. I think I can comfortably lay this hand down at this point.
All right, well, here's his double crap. I thought a few seconds after talking it out, letting him know I flopped a boat, and he folded it face up, Chris.
Well, he folded his boat face up.
Face up.
Very nice.
The table and even the dealer were shocked. Everyone asked the button what he had. He told me I could pick a card, and the guy in the small blind grabbed one and flipped up the ace of hearts.
Okay. I think he's got... oh, well, I don't think he has aces. I think he's got to have, like, the five of hearts in his hand.
So, of course, Tom, wow, did I just fold the winning boat? He asked if I wanted to see the other, and, of course, I said, sure. He flipped up the five of hearts.
See, I'm a little confused, because I think earlier in the hand, when you said the river, it must have been the five of hearts. It couldn't have been, so I don't know what he was talking about, flush draws getting there and stuff.
Yeah.
I don't know. But
he's a little confused.
Yeah,
maybe had a few beers with that $900 that he won.
He's probably still have an endorphin high from folding the underboat and being correct, so that's probably what it was. But, yeah, I mean, it makes sense, right? Ace of hearts, five of hearts makes perfect sense.
Yeah, so, again, we're not quite sure how he got the facts here, but he says, makes sense. He flopped a nut flush draw with a redraw to the straight flush, got lucky with the five on the river, and our hero made a pretty good fold.
Yeah, that's a good fold. Wow.
He says, I thought about it a little bit more. If I would have bet out big after the boat, he probably would have called for his flush draw. I could have gotten him off the hand on the turn. Over the five coming out, you could think he was still good. He said, he only showed because I was leaving soon.
Yeah, I agree. I think we talked about that, too. A bigger bet on the turn may have ended this hand because he didn't bet at all. A check, check. So, I mean, if you bet, like, you know, there's a good over $100 in the pot now. If you bet 100, 110 on that turn, I don't think he's calling for what he would probably feel has to be a one outer at that point to make a straight flush or five, you know, I guess that's other 3-5, so 2-5. So he's looking at three outs if he really believes you have a full house. So I think a $110 bet might have got him to lay it down.
All right. Well, everybody send your hands of the week to podcast@anyupmagazine.com. And if we use your hand and you haven't already won something, we'll send you something terrific. Like a download of the Poker Hand Breakdown Pro, a hand history analysis program for single or mixed games from the good folks at element26.net.
Awesome. Well, I want to thank Annie Duke for being on our show today, and I look forward to some more EPL news coming our way. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
We'll see you at the tables.
Annie Up is a production of AnnieUpMagazine.com and is recorded at WDAE 620 AM in Tampa. Contact us at podcast@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call our hotline at 813-448-1120. If you'd like to advertise, send us an email at advertising@AnnieUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.